Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
Stuff that changed the world.
The mobile phone. The internet changed the world.
Penicillin, I would have thought.
I would say sanitation.
It changes everything.
Today's great invention is the mirror, which is significantly older than one might imagine. Simon joins us once again. Good afternoon, Simon.
Afternoon, Sean.
How old are we talking?
We can trace the earliest mirror that we've discovered to about 8,000 years ago, so 6,000 BC. The story of the mirror is essentially about three countries, Turkey, Italy and France. Although Italy didn't exist at that point, so more specifically, the city-state of Venice. So this original mirror that was discovered by archaeologists in the early 1960s, Sean, in central Turkey, It was made with obsidian stone, which is essentially volcanic glass. So it is a stone, but when you look at it, it almost looks like a cross between a rock and glass. This would have been carved out of a rock face, and it would have been polished over a long period of time using both the hands and perhaps other stones to create a friction. And eventually, you were able to create a surface which had a certain percentage of reflectivity. Now, the big question, or perhaps the more pertinent question, is what was this early mirror used for? One assumes from our modern perspective that it was used for people to look at themselves in. But it brings up a much more existential question of what is a mirror for? And there are many uses to a mirror. So scholars are, archaeologists are split on what this obsidian mirror was used for. Some believe that it may have been used as a kind of a religious ritual, that shamans may have looked into this obsidian mirror and they may have tried to read the future based on what they saw in it. Obviously, the reflection that was coming back to these people was very distorted. It wasn't like a beautiful silver mirror that we use today, which is crystal clear, like a photograph. It may also have had a much more practical purpose, and that is to direct sunlight to light a fire, or indeed to direct sunlight into a shaft or a cave to light it up and see where you're walking and where you're going. So almost like a torch.
All right, okay. But is there no evidence that they would have used it for, you know, doing their makeup or cutting hairs out of your nostrils?
Not really.
The two main purposes, I think.
Like that really alarming mirror that you get in some hotel bathroom.
Yes.
You suddenly look at it and your head is enormous. Is that really the size of my nose? But the only evidence that we have that it may have been used for aesthetic purposes or for vanity purposes, rather, is that it was found, it seems to have only been discovered exclusively in the coffins or graves of women. And that it was considered such an item of extreme value and preciousness that it was buried with these women as something to go with them into the afterlife.
Right, okay. So it would have been, presumably, at least thousands of years ago, was an item that not everybody had. It took a lot of work to make
it. No. This is something very expensive. Indeed, until the second half of the 19th century, mirrors were exclusively for the wealthy. These were really expensive things to make, using really valuable natural materials and metals.
Yeah. So, and I suppose the interesting is the different, different materials that were used to make mirrors or what we recognize as a mirror.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we did have mirrors in the Roman and Greek world. You know, Pliny, for example, that great kind of archivist of domestic life in ancient Rome, he talks about the use of silver and bronze mirrors in his time. Now, these would have been polished, the thickness of the metal changing how powerful the reflection was. We know in Pompeii that handheld bronze mirrors have been discovered. These were certainly for vanity purposes. But things really begin to materialize into what we would consider to be the modern glass mirror in Germany, of all places. The Germans played a really important role in developing early glass mirrors. So if we look at Nuremberg, for example, in the 15th century, this is where we see the origins of the convex mirror. And this is really important. And you'll see it in a lot of paintings from the 15th century, particularly the Arnolfini wedding, that famous painting of the couple with the convex mirror in the background. And this was used as a kind of a lucky charm to ward off spirits away from people's home. That was the function of the mirror, because if you look in a convex mirror, it doesn't actually give a very accurate reflection.
Yes, a flattering one.
Or a flattering one, for that matter. But this was blown glass. So the glass blower would create this globe of liquid glass. As that began to harden, it would be split down the middle so that you're given this convex sheet of glass. That's why it is convex, these early glass mirrors. Then as it cooled, either a liquid tin or a liquid lead would be put inside of that glass globe and swirled around as it lost its temperature. And that would create a metallic taint on the inside of the glass. And then when you turn that around, you had a much more reflective surface. So that's the most effective early glass mirror that we're talking about. We know Nuremberg was a really important center for mirror making at that time, because they were the first to have a guild of mirror makers. A century later, there were a guild of mirror makers all over Europe. But what's also interesting about this, Sean, is that the mirror seems to have played an enormous role in creating this sense of the self, of the individual, of people suddenly being able to appreciate what they actually looked like for the first time.
Mm.
So in the 15th century, we see an enormous shift in art history from religious iconography to painting portraits. And people are suddenly like, oh, this is what I look like. The human face is interesting. So there's an explosion in that. And I think the mirror probably played an important role in that.
God, that's so interesting as well. That probably would have had all sorts of ramifications socially, politically, in all sorts of ways. You can't quite probably just straightforwardly trace from there. But
absolutely,
it makes common sense. It would have.
It does. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, the way they were making mirrors at this time, it all sounds kind of a bit unhealthy for the people who were making them, possibly.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. The mirror making industry was very dangerous. We need to travel to Venice to really look at the dark side of this history, Sean. From the 14th, 15th century, Venice becomes the center of the mirror manufacturing industry all over the world. And it's a secret. They have a secret technique that they are reluctant to tell anyone else about. They are making mercury paned mirrors, okay? Mercury is obviously highly toxic.
Yeah.
This is this process was done whereby a layer of tin foil is essentially what it was, just very, very thin tin, was laid down on a cast. Then liquid mercury was poured onto that. Then an amalgam is formed. An amalgam is this meeting, this seeping of the mercury into the tin. And that created a highly reflective surface. And then a pane of glass was put on top of that. Now, the secret recipe, the secret technique that the Venetians were using. Remember, Venice at this time, particularly in the 17th and 18th century, was one of the richest cities in the world. You had the salt trade. They were a very powerful seafaring city. And they were exporting these mirrors. So there was a huge amount of them being made. But the Venetian authorities, they didn't want the secret getting out about this use of mercury, because they were able to sell them to other wealthy countries like Britain and France and Austria and all the rest. So on pain of death, literally, the workers in these mercury mirror factories were told not to share any information with spies who might be coming into the city. They were eventually all brought out to the island of Murano, which still has a mirror manufacturing industry to this day, except with all legal work practices. And they were told that if they spoke to the opposition, to the French or the British, that not only would they be executed, but their family would be taken hostage as well.
Crikey.
However, someone did get through. Louis XIV was envious to the point of rage about the Venetian mirror industry. And he sent his finance minister, Colbert, all the way to Venice, which would have taken a long time in those days, to find the technique, find the secret recipe to the mirrors, because he wanted to build a grand palace of mirrors in Versailles, a grand hall of mirrors, which of course became the Great Hall of Mirrors in Versailles.
Of course, right, okay.
And Colbert went there, and under, you know, classic espionage, I mean, I'm surprised a movie hasn't been made out of this yet, but serious cloak and dagger, eventually they got someone to talk. And they lured, with the promise of great fortune, no doubt, some of the Venetian craftsmen who were making these mirrors back to France. And suddenly you then have an indigenous mirror manufacturing industry in France. And then the Hall of Mirrors is built in 1678, if I'm not mistaken.
Now, and apart from being, you know, threatened with death and your family's being kidnapped, the physical process of making these with mercury that was presumably had very bad effects on people's health.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, mercury, the fumes that were coming off, because essentially it had to be baked after the amalgam was created, and the mercury fumes coming off that were very, very dangerous. People were suffering from weakness, irritability, tremors, delirium. There was one writer who gives a brilliant contemporary account of what it was like in one of these factories on the island of Murano in Venice, and he wrote, "Those who make the mirrors become palsied and asthmatic from handling mercury. You may see these workers staring with reluctance and scowling at the reflection of their own suffering in their mirrors and cursing the trade that they had chosen."
Oh God, there's an irony in that, isn't
it?
You see, you can literally see yourself getting sicker and sicker as you're making mirrors. When did they start then making mirrors that aren't completely horrible?
Yeah, you can still find these mirrors, but 1856 is the key date. That is when the mirror that we still use today was invented. This, again, a German chemist by the name of Justus von Liebig, he discovered that liquid silver created an even more powerful reflection than mercury, but it didn't have the horrible fumes and toxicity of mercury. And it also didn't tarnish as quickly. You know, when you go to an old country house estate or something and you see these mirrors up on the wall, they look very tarnished.
Mm.
They might be mercury mirrors, where the reflection over time slowly starts to kind of become much less sharp, and much less real reflection.
Right, God, how and so since that time, pretty much the mirrors we have today, they're liquid silver mirrors.
Yes.
Yeah. Simon, fascinating as ever. Simon Tierney there, the book version of Stuff That Changed the World will be published towards the end of this week. So next weekend, when you're out shopping for books, you know what to ask for. Simon, thanks a million. We'll take a break after that. The creature that lived in Clare 325 million years ago.